And let's get back to the slides. So now what we're going to do is
look at how we can actually build and define this conceptual model. So this is the diagram I was referring to. The user emits commands while is putting together the command. There is feedback. Even if you just click on the button, there is feedback. You know, the button changes color somehow, and etc. So even for simple interactions, it's good to have feedback. And those commands are turned into operations that operate on internal objects of the system. Maybe, you know, they go do other things. I don't know, query databases or things like this. But at some point, you get a response. Now, when the operation is a long operation, you probably also want some form of feedback that the operation is in progress, or maybe the responses are coming progressively. So this is a very simplified diagram. The thing we're going to do is we're going to define the conceptual model in terms of these five boxes here. We're going to identify what are the objects. And in general, when you build an interactive system, you're trying to solve a particular problem. So you have some obvious objects of interest, the things that the users are going to want to manipulate. If you're doing, I don't know, an instant messaging app, well, you have the messages are the things that people are going to send back and forth. If you're doing a tool for editing diagram or something, you have fairly good idea to start with the kind of objects the users are going to want to manipulate. And once you have those objects, it's pretty usually easy to get started on what are you going to want to do with these objects. Now, in general, you can always, you can always think in terms of, well, if there are objects, is the user allowed to create those objects? And if so, we'll have to figure out how. Or are these objects coming from somewhere else and the user doesn't have to create them? Similarly, can he or she delete the objects? And then, do these objects have properties that I want to be able to modify? And operations usually will, you know, be some sort of combination of creation, deletion, and modification of properties. So in a sense, we're starting from the inside of the application and going towards the user, because we need to know what are the concepts that the user will need to manipulate first before deciding on exactly how things are going to look and how you're going to interact with them. So that's why I start with objects, then operations, and then we go to commands. How are we going to trigger those operations? How is the user going to specify how to create a new object, modify an object, delete an object? Now, what we'll see here is that I am not designing the interface from, you know, how it's going to look like necessarily. Now, in the process of creating this conceptual model here, it's good to, you know, sketch on the side, well, you know, things could be like this on the screen. But that is a thing that can change the most. I mean, the layout or, you know, what is visible, how things are represented. Decisions about what the objects are, what the operations are much harder to change at later stages. So you want to really start with that and not get stuck on the look of the interface. Now, one way I used to represent this is with two tables, and I call them the interaction tables. And in fact, in these two tables, you see all the things we just talked about. So the first table is the objects table, where for each object, I'm going to specify which operations can be applied to that object. And the other two columns here are how I want this object to be represented on the screen, because you remember from the principles we've seen that you have to represent the state of the interface. So if my object is a file, if I'm creating a file manager, my object is a file, I want operations to delete a file, to rename a file, to maybe create a new empty file. If I wanted to have folders, it probably would be another line in this table, because a folder is a different type of object. And then those files, well, they will look graphically, I will use an icon. The form of the icon depends on the file type, and then I want to display the name. So that's what the user sees. Now, internally, in order to manage my object, I will need to have some properties for this object. And a file typically has a path, it has a type, it has a name, it has a size, it has a content, etc. Now, already just thinking in terms of these objects, you can look at a certain set of rules, if you wish, for consistency of the description. So, you know, if you have an object that has certain properties, and some properties are not visible in any of the representations, you have to ask yourself, why is that? So maybe the property is not relevant to the user, and it should not be there. Maybe, you know, it will have to be in the implementation, but that's for computing reasons, not for user interface reasons. Or maybe you missed something, and there should be a way to visualize this property, to make it visible somehow. Now, sometimes you may have some properties that, for some reason, like the size, here I've put the size, you know, on typical file managers, to get to see the file, the size of a file, you have to open an information box. It's kind of complicated. But on the Macintosh Finder, for example, I have a setting somewhere where I can have the size displayed underneath the name of the file on every icon. And some people may want to have this because they think it's important. So you can already start thinking about the mapping between properties and representations, and there can be several representations for a given object. You know, a file on a computer can be represented by an icon, it can be represented by a line in a list of item, or it can be also open and represent the document it contains. Then in terms of operation, you have to ask yourself, well, you know, can we create and delete those objects? And then can I change all these properties? Now, some properties are not changeable or not changeable directly. Typically, you know, you don't want to be able to change the size of the file just telling it, well, now you're that big. The size is a result of its content. But again, it forces you to ask those questions and to make sure you're not forgetting anything just to describe your objects. Then the second table describes the operations. Now, of course, this operations column should match that here. So everything that you've identified as an operation on a particular object should be described in the operations table. Now, sometimes you can group things together because typically, you know, deleting things can be, you know, if you delete everything by putting it into the trash, you don't have to say, well, to delete a file, do this, to delete a folder, do that, to delete something else, do that. You can group them together. But you have to make sure that all the operations are accounted for here. And so here, for the operations, that's where we describe really the interaction. These are the three boxes I had in my diagram. What is a command? So I can drag and drop the icon into the trash. The feedback I get while I do this is the ghost of the icon follows the cursor until I get to the trash. And the response, what happens at the end, is that the icon disappears and the trash can gets bigger to show that it has more stuff. I have another command here, which is a shortcut, because I can just select the file and hit the delete key. The selected icon gets highlighted, or it flashes or something. And then maybe my response is that it will see the file move by itself to the trash. Right. So important thing here is that you're thinking in terms of user terms, what the interaction is going to be like. how things work under the hood, how the file gets actually deleted from the file system. It's not your problem, right? However, you know, starting from this description, then you can go into the traditional software engineering process of how you, you know, specify. You can do UML diagrams and everything you want if it so pleases you. Starting from this, which can act in a sense as a list of requirements, functional requirements. So now what gets interesting is how does that help you build a better conceptual system? I think it helps you because it helps you keep track of the interface, not, I mean, you're probably going to draw on the side how the interface looks like, so it makes sense in your head. But you can look at this table to find issues with consistency or with completeness. Make sure that, as I said, you know, every property is visible. Maybe it's editable if it makes sense to edit it. Looking at consistency between operations, if you have different types of object and you have the same delete operation, are the commands similar or not? And if not, why? So what I'm going to do now, in the time we have left, is look at a couple of case studies. And what I've chosen to do was to look at the conceptual models for tools you know, I suppose, fairly well. Tools like Photoshop for editing images made of pixels, and tools like Illustrator to edit images made of vectors, of shapes, geometrical shapes. And the reason I'm taking this is because, in a sense, those tools allow you to produce images, but they are still very different. And so if we follow the process I've talked about, we have to first identify the objects. So it's a tool to produce images. What are those images made of in the end? So if I show you this very fancy drawing here with a yellow circle and a blue rectangle, if I ask you, what is this drawing made of? Shapes. Yeah, I just said it, so it's not smart of me. Well, are you sure?
Could be that the rectangle is not a rectangle.
And, and we don't see it.
We don't see the corner.
Well, I want to think that maybe, you know, I'm fooling you into thinking it's a circle and a rectangle. In fact, it's all a bunch of pixels that have been cleverly put together. And so if they are indeed just a set of pixels that you could paint one by one, it means that you can do something like this. I can erase them. You know, in the end, everything ends up as a pixel. So, looks like a rectangle, it tastes like a rectangle, but maybe it's not a rectangle. Now, of course, yes, maybe it is indeed a rectangle in a circle. In that case, what it can and should be able to do easily is to move the circle over the rectangle, and to, you know, keep the shapes in shape, so to speak. And it also means that I can probably also change the superposition. Now, of course, whether I'm thinking of my drawing as pixels or as shapes, the way to create the drawing and the editing capabilities are going to be very different. So the objects that my model is going to have, and the operations and the commands are going to be different. Now, when I have more time to do this part of the lecture, I use a third type, which is called a planar map. Because what I could have done too is created a rectangle, created a circular shape, and make it so that every time I create a new shape, it calculates all the intersections. And so I would have here an intersection, here another, and then I can delete part of shapes between intersections. And I could have created something with the exact same result, but in fact, when I then move the circle, the rectangle has lost its corner. And that's something called planar maps, and it's a very powerful way of doing drawings. I'll put a link to a paper about this. For those of you who know, it has some of the capabilities of what you do with constructive solid geometry, where you can do unions and differences and intersections of shapes, which Illustrator lets you do if you fight hard enough. But it's a lot more powerful. So, you know, it could, what I want to say here is that, you know, we tend to think, well, is it pixels, is it vectors, but it could be even this other thing. So all of this to get to the observation that, you know, we can be editing bitmaps, which are images made out of pixels, and so the basic objects are going to be pixels. Now, do we want to edit the pixels one by one? Probably not. So if you look at a software like Photoshop, they have this notion of selection, which allows you to operate on a group of pixels at once. And so the basic, I would say, one of the basic objects in Photoshop, and for now I'm omitting all the layering stuff and all the zillion things they have added to the basic model, but the basic objects is more going to be a set of pixels. And of course, it can be a set of one pixel, so I can also edit individual pixel if I want. And so then if I think of my basic object as being a set of pixels, the basic operations I'm going to need are going to be how to define this set of pixels. So, you know, I can lasso them, I can rectangle select, I can select them by color. I want to define this group of pixels. And then I will have functions to apply transformation to these pixels in this area, changing their color, or copying them, or etc. Now, compare this with the other model where I'm editing vectors. Well, it's called vector graphics. I'm editing geometrical shapes. And in that case, my basic objects are those geometrical shapes. And not only that, but they are also organized in a stack, so there is an order to them. So that even if two shapes don't overlap, in fact, one happens to be in front of the other, you cannot see it, which actually is a visibility problem in all these interfaces, but they have an order of superposition. And so once I'm thinking in terms of geometrical shapes, the operations I'm going to have are modify the geometry of the object, the shape of the shape, if you wish, or modify the graphical attributes of the objects. What is the thickness, what is the color, what is the texture, you name it. And then because I have this stack, I need a way to manipulate this stacking order. So I said nothing about, you know, whether my interface is going to be touch-based or desktop, or maybe, you know, controlled by voice or by, you know, gestures, I don't know, but I already have a set of objects, a set of operations. And where I start looking at interaction is when I start filling out these tables. So here, if I look at the set of I should have the objects first. By the way, it should be online now. I tested. You have something in the cache. Anyway, so let's start with the objects. So I have this notion of an area. So the area, this property is really the set of pixels inside the area. I don't know how to define it better than that. I want to be able to define this area, modify it, and maybe fill it, and I, of course, would have other operations. Now, how do I show this area on the screen? That's actually a problem, because in pixel editing, you know, all the pixels are part of the image. So one solution that Photoshop, I think, has introduced is what they call the marching ants. Did you know that? So it's like the outline of your shape has this little dashed pattern that moves. It's like little ants moving, marching around your area. Okay, it's cute. But they made something animated so you can see it, whatever the color of your drawing is.
So right now I'm only talking about this area, and so I'm going to go to the functions for editing the bitmap now. I want to be able to select an area. And you know, in Photoshop you have a zillion and one way of selecting an area. So you can select a rectangle, you can select a lasso where you do any shape. They have these clever lassos that can follow the contrast. You can select by color, you name it. Now, they all look the same in that, you know, you select a tool, you click and drag, the system displays a ghost so you know what you're doing, and then at the end you have these marching ants starting to march around your area. Now, once I have this area, I want to modify it. So to modify it, well, I may want to be able to fill it with a color, but that's kind of simple. I also want to paint inside this area. Now, the thing is, to paint, I need a brush. And I need the brush to have a color. So in Photoshop, you select the brush, you've selected the color somewhere, and then you click and drag. The cursor changes, so it shows you that you have a brush. It's showing the ink as you paint, and then at the end it's going to apply that color more carefully than during the feedback. If you look carefully, things is recomputed at the end of the stroke. If I want to fill, I could select the paint tool and the bucket tool, and then click in the area, and it will fill the area. Now the thing is that here, I've introduced a new object in my conceptual model. They say, well, you're going to paint with a brush. And the brush, you know, it's going to have a color and it's going to have a shape. Well, where does this come from? So here you have to think, well, you know, the user is going to have to think in terms of brushes. It's going to be part of the conceptual model. So if we go to the part here, now I'm adding a new type of object that are needed for my system to work. This one is more like a tool, but a brush is going to have a shape, a transparency, a color. In Photoshop, the color is actually set separately, which I always find confusing because you can only have one color selected at a time. And the operation is the paint operation that we just described. Now, the brush will have multiple representations. I've only shown here the one where you're using the brush, where it's the shape of the cursor becomes a brush, so you know you're using the brush. But in fact, you can also double-click a brush to edit it, and then you get another representation where you can see its size, or you can see its color, or its transparency, and its other attributes. In modern versions of Photoshop, actually, you see that at the top, in the kind of a ribbon area where you can edit it directly. Now, the thing that's interesting if we continue this process is that you're going to find other tools. I mean, Photoshop has a bunch of tools. It has the brushes, it has the eraser, it has the pencil, it has a whole bunch of tools to modify the content of your drawing. And then, at some point, these tools, you put them in tool palettes. In Photoshop, they make it so you can actually decide how you organize the tool palettes. There are these little windows, and there is even ways to create your own. You can load some color palettes, for example, which are specialized tool palettes. So at some point, you're going to come up with the concept that, well, you know, the tool palette is also something that users are going to have to know about, and so they are going to become objects of my conceptual model. And then once you have tool palette, you're going to have to ask yourself, well, what am I going to do with these tool palettes? So here,
well, here I don't have examples, but the fact that you can organize tool palettes, put them together in one window or separate them around, etc., would, you know, enrich your model. Now, since we have very little time, I'm going to skip to the other type of graphical editing. Again, we're going to start with the shapes, with the objects, sorry. So the objects are the shapes. So what's a shape? Well, a graphical shape, it typically has two things. One is the geometry. Is it a circle, a rectangle, a triangle, a star? And what is the coordinates of the points of that geometry? And then it has graphical attributes, which tells the color of the background, whether it is empty or not, if it has a border, what the thickness of the border, etc., etc. And so here again, we find, well, we need to be able to create those objects. We should also be able to delete them. And when we want to modify the geometry, and we want to change the attributes. So this is, you know, always a thing to have to keep in mind. New object, how do you create, delete, change attributes? And so if I go now to the operations, well, to modify the, is that? That's the time where my PowerPoint refuses to use the keyboard anymore. Here we are. So to create an object, well, typically you're going to have a palette where you have different types of objects. Are you going to create a rectangle or a circle or a star or something? And then it's a click and drag interaction where you see the shape of the object as you draw it. And then the response is that there is a new shape created with whatever the current graphical attributes are. And the object is on top of everything else. You could have another, you can imagine here another interface using a pencil. Maybe you could use gesture to draw the shape, and the system would beautify it. Then once you have objects, you need to be able to select objects, because a number of things are going to change the selected objects. So it's just clicking on it. And to modify the geometry of the object, you can select it. You have handles that are going to show up, and those handles are going to help you resize or reshape the object, and then you see the changes in real time, and then you have the result. And to modify attributes, typically you're going to use some kind of dialog box, or more likely, hopefully, an inspector. So you click on the object. The attributes of the objects are shown in the inspector, and as you change them, they change the object, and they apply those changes to the shape. And then you would have something for changing the stacking order. So here we didn't really have to introduce new objects. This system would have a number of tools, so probably you could reuse the same part of the conceptual model we did for the other editor for the tool palette. I've added here as an object the attribute inspector. Now, that's something that you have to be sort of careful, because my experience is that there's oftentimes a misunderstanding by you, the students, that, you know, any button or any window or anything on the screen is an object. We're talking about the objects of interest of the user, the things that, you know, he's going to have in his mind when he's thinking, I need to use this software, what are the objects I'm manipulating. I think the attribute inspector, you know, is a visual object that is kind of a lens showing you what's in the what's in the object that you have selected. So you can see it as a form of tool because it gives you access to all these properties. But again, don't fall into the trap of thinking that, you know, any interface element is an object. So just quickly to wrap up, when you create this conceptual models with this technique, you see kind of the same thing coming again and again. And it's a good idea to group them by category. So you have a number of commands for just managing your workspace, you know, moving windows around or configuring the palettes, things like this. Sometimes you can separate global editing of the layout of objects versus local editing of individual objects. By grouping things together, it allows you to reuse things from one model to another because some aspects of the interface are very common and shared between different types of application. The important thing, the most important thing is these two things: verify completeness, verify consistency. So of course, completeness, you should have same operations in both tables, and each property should be visible and editable. Or again, if it's not, you need to make sure why that is the case and whether it should really be a property. So that's some aspects of completeness. Consistency is, you know, do the similar interactions have similar effects? That's one form of consistency. You can look at consistency of the representations and the other things. But the real goal of these tables is to help you do these verifications. When you to help you, so you can use design principles. The problem is this is part of a class that I decided to do later this year, so it's probably looking weird. So we're going to skip that for now. But the thing is that you can use the rules that I listed before on consistency, on feedback, on mapping, and to do what we call a walkthrough, go through your conceptual model and see if there are issues with things like errors and other some of these rules. And so, in fact, this process meshes with what most of you will see in Wendy's class, where you start by, you know, doing these interviews and brainstorming and prototyping, paper prototypes, video prototypes, and then at the end, at some point, she will have you do some of these interaction tables to create then, you know, the design of the interface. So it's part of this overall process. Okay, I know some of you have to go take a class at the other end of the world, so we're going to stop here. So remember that next week you have the TA on Wednesday, and I will teach and the rooms will be announced.
Thank you. You said next week you're swapping with the TA, but actually next Thursday, there's no TA supposedly. There's nothing in the calendar for the afternoon.